OTB.
Don't shoot.
Oh, he dinked it. Oh!
It's a goal!
It's a goal!
The 6-1.
What a ball!
Rafinha hit. Oh, 15 seconds left.
That is amazing.
OTB live commentary. Never miss the action right here on OTB Sports Radio. Keep up to date with the latest scores on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Sports app. Live score updates straight to your phone. The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now then, still nil all between Chelsea and Wolves. Honoured as ever to be joined by Ronan O'Gara. Evening.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Honoured, I said.
I can't see you, but...
Can you not?
I can hear you. No, it's okay.
Okay. Interestingly, the graphic underneath your name says Miguel Delaney of the London Independent, but I can assure everyone it is, in fact, Ronan O'Gara. So, listen, lots to talk to you about. La Rochelle, 40 points to 3 winners against Bayonne. Second in the table, game in hand against Toulouse. Given the COVID situation you have come out of, that is very satisfactory, I would think.
Yeah, it is, but we've bigger games ahead, obviously, with all respect to Bayonne. We have, hopefully, Toulouse, but I think there could be cases of COVID in Toulouse, so we're not too sure about that. That's disappointing when you go hard at it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then potentially at the end of a session on a Wednesday you hear that they have potential cases. So does the game go ahead? Because obviously these are the reasons you're involved in rugby for weeks like this, but playing Toulouse at home, obviously there'd be no supporters then, away to Racing in a rearranged game, away to Toulon the following week, home to Stade Francais. So it's going to reach boiling point quite soon.
Okay. And that Toulouse game was meant to be this weekend, or is meant to be this weekend?
Sorry, it is this weekend.
It is this weekend,
yeah. But it was just a few little whispers out from players. I think they have a few contacts, like a lot of people in other dressing rooms. So I think they've had one case for definite, but hopefully it is only one case.
Yes, absolutely. And at your end then, so I know you had various positive cases in La Rochelle. Has everybody come through it okay? And I don't just mean, you know, out of, you know, danger of it or out of hospital or anything like that. I just mean general energy levels back, fitness back, or have people been hit hard by it?
Yeah, people are hit hard, yeah. Everyone is very different and there's no, I suppose, common trends emerging from a rugby point of view. It's... some guys, you know, I mean, tested positive over 2 weeks ago, but they wouldn't be reintegrated into the group. They're, I think the common consensus seems to be that they all find the first, even light jog, extremely difficult. But quickly kind of get it back between, you know, sessions 2, 3, 4, 5. But an awful lot of people... Are struggling with it. The guys who have tested positive have their feedback is just it's not a nice thing to get.
No, I'm sure. Did you catch Munster Leinster over the weekend?
I did. I watched it. Yeah, my reception was incredibly frustrating because I need Wi-Fi to watch games over here, and surprisingly this works very well, but when I try and watch TV, unfortunately it pauses when you don't want it to pause and jumps.
Okay.
So, but you do, I did see the last 10 minutes when Munster were behind and I could see that the box kick was still there, which was disappointing in terms of chasing a game like that. I suppose the thing is that when you're behind, you at least have to look to see if your winger's going to chase the kick. It just seemed that they gave the ball to Leinster too easily at the end. But then the flip side of it is that Leinster showed immense quality in why they are a championship team. They played pretty averagely, but they got one or two opportunities and the Ross Byrne kick was brilliant.
Yeah, maybe actually you're the man to ask. A lot of people were complimentary of the technique Byrne used on that kick. What was good about it?
I actually thought initially going to bed, I didn't realise. I presumed it was a ricochet and the ball bounced through, and then when I watched it again I realized that he threaded it it was kind of, he had 1 in 100 probably opportunities of doing that, and to get it through like that. So obviously that skill is a lot easier left to right for right footed kickers, because you're running an arc and you kind of leave the ball inside your foot, and you just basically, you know, I mean, it's down a little bit from your big toes where you're looking to kick it, mm-hmm. and you're looking to get the arc, but the bounce. You know that if you commit to the kick, even in a short space of grass, the ball would bounce up for the recipient. And mind you, Hugo Keenan did exceptionally well, and his offload pass was Toulouse-esque.
He's winning lots of plaudits on Munster generally, and then I do want to ask you
about. Yeah, he is, and rightly so. Yeah. He's I think he's taken every, I suppose, you have to forget how inexperienced he is, but every challenge put to him, he's excelled, and he looks like there's more in the tank. And that's great to see young guys, I suppose, getting that up. Sorry, a guy like him taking his opportunity, but also probably in whatever way he has done it, showing he has more to offer.
Mm. On Munster generally, there's a sense that they really could have won that game. There's also a sense, though, that they are closing the gap somewhat on Leinster. I wonder, to what extent do you think they are closing the gap on Leinster?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think, you know, we do talk about small margins, and it's 10-3 after, you know, I mean, 40.10 on the match clock. JJ has a kick, a goal, hits it really well. You flip it around and Leinster go in 13-3. If you're looking at it from a psychological point of view, that's what happens when you have confidence, I suppose, right throughout your team. Munster haven't had that feeling for a number of years. So not alone was it 10-3 at half time, it was 10-6. It could have been 13-3. Which is a very, very different game, Joe. And the fact that, you know, on a worst case scenario, you give up a try, it's 10-10, it's a draw, that's all right. But like going in from that position to 10-6, it just means that, okay, if we give up a try here, it's game over. In the fact that, sorry, they go ahead, it's not game over, but it just mentally plays on your mind in terms of where the offside line is, and how you can kind of cheat with good intent in a game in terms of, you know what I mean, just really pushing that offside line from a defensive point of view. I think Munster managed the game very, very well. They started exceptionally well, and it was a very physical game for the first half an hour. A lot of big collisions, a lot of big hits. And Robbie Henshaw was to the fore. I thought he had an excellent game. But yeah, I think when you break it down and you look at it and it's pieces and parts, that there was definitely a lot of progress made by Munster. But I think with the quality of players they have there, they'd be disappointed that they didn't kick on to win the game.
Mm, okay.
And even against such quality.
It is Leinster, yeah. And is there anything in particular that Munster are doing better now that they weren't necessarily doing, say, a year ago?
I think they are doing a lot of, you can see, like, how they started the game, I think, you know what I mean? Like, Chris Farr was acting as a pivot. They were playing a little bit more width. The ruck ball was a little bit quicker. They were changing the point of attack a little bit quicker. CJ, you know what I mean, has added a little bit of, variation in the fact that in the past with Munster, you would always presume he's there to carry, but now he's actually scanning to see where the space is. And I think with their skill levels, the boys are able to put the ball into space. So there is progress. You've got to remember it's a January night and you won't see the best of the rugby probably till March or April. Mm.
Okay. We'll watch that space. Andy Farrell was speaking today. It was the Six Nations launch. You never got roped into one of those launch days, did you, for Six Nations?
No, in my day, though, it was the coach and captain you scored to. Yeah. I think, was it London?
London,
I think.
Yeah. A long day, by all accounts. One to be dodged.
Oh, I don't know about that. You're going you're going as the captain of your country, Joe. That's the other way of looking at it.
It's true. It's nicer to captain your country in a match, though, not sitting around doing interviews all day.
But yeah, anyway. But like, that's the other side that people don't understand. You know what I mean? That's the 80 minutes. But I think the bigger picture is a small part of your life, and it's something that you should absolutely grasp with both hands, and it's a massive honour. So
yeah,
I think it's sometimes, you know, you kind of forget the privilege it is.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I wouldn't be recommending you turn down the captaincy on account of having to do this day.
No, not that, but like, how bad, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly. Well, you're right, okay.
Yeah. You get on a plane, you can have a cup of tea, a little bit of a snooze, you get driven to your... to do it. But yeah, you said roll back and you asked me that as a player, and I would have been exactly like you.
Yeah, so. Exactly. This is the thing, you'd have been cussing the whole way to the...
Oh, be sure, man. Grumpy heading me and narky with the journalists.
Exactly.
That's for sure. Yeah.
So Andy Farrell talking today, and he reiterated the sense, I think that everyone has, and he said as much back in autumn, that England and France are admittedly the teams to beat. He said, we're not that far off them. We're not that far off England and France. So England and France... come to Dublin. I know you don't have team sheets in front of you and injuries and all that stuff will happen. But England and France coming to Dublin, would you expect England and France this year to win in Dublin or no?
I think it was probably a 50-50 game. I think, sorry, the French game, because it's the second game. The Wales game will either be an absolute massive... positive or a very low, I think, psychological blow, depending on how that game goes. And obviously the momentum feeds into it, because it's, you play on a Sunday and you're back into action the following Saturday. Or no, Sunday again, is it?
Yeah, I think it's Sunday, Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, in that regard, are they facing into a training week with a pep in their step? Or is it, oh, this is a hugely pressurized game all of a sudden? I think the massive positive for them is that France do not have a centre like Fatakawa to replace Fatakawa or anyone in that ballpark. Right. So with him not in the back line, it's a very different French team, I feel.
Mm. Yeah, you're probably right to bring in the Cardiff game first off. That will dictate so much. Can you imagine how tough the schedule looks if you lose in Cardiff?
Well, you know, like you also have to, I suppose, tease that out with the fact that how hard it is to win away in the Six Nations too.
Yeah.
And the record there, I'm not too sure how it is, but I wouldn't think it's overwhelming in favour of Ireland.
No.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously we can't be guided too much by history, because that doesn't really apply nowadays. And the fact that it's, you know, I mean, if you're looking at a percentage over 100 years, you're probably, it'd be more accurate to look at the last, you know, 10 years or whatever it is. But like Wales is a camp that's under pressure, but you have to be so wary of a wounded Welsh side. And this is the game that they'll be targeting for a number of months. And this is the game they have to come out firing in. So it's a crucial game. And that's, I suppose we always say that as players, when you played for Ireland, the fact of trying to get momentum in the Six Nations, you have, you know what I mean, two teams that are top of the table after round one, and they're extremely happy where they are. There's three teams, but other than that, it's so important, obviously, to get off to that to that start.
You've sidestepped my question beautifully, by the way.
Go on, remind me again what it was, because...
France, England, Dublin, at the outset. Would you have them favourites for both games? I just want to know. My sense would be Ireland, France is probably 51-49, maybe 50-50 game in Dublin, Ireland, France. And then I'd be fearful still of England coming to Dublin, but who knows? So I'm curious as to what you think.
Yeah, I would be too. I think England are better than the other teams in the Six Nations at the minute. But... they are at the minute, but you play for the 80 minutes that you're tested on. And I think with the experience and the quality in the Irish team, would it surprise me Ireland winning in Dublin? No, not at all. But if you were to kind of, I suppose, try to break it down with a little bit of logical sense, England have a very settled team, a very experienced team, but also so many really top players playing at the top of their game. I suppose Ireland see, for me, there's probably a little bit of youthful exuberance missing from the team at the minute.
Mm. Well, to be fair to you as well, the England game is last game out, so so much will change between now and then. I was just curious to get your overall thoughts at the outset. A 36-man squad named by Andy Farrell, by the way. If we're looking for some youthful exuberance coming through, interesting to see Craig Casey get the nod along with Murray and Gibson Parks, and no Luke McGrath, no John Cooney, Marmion out as well. That would really suggest that they...
And Caelan played, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of good players. Yes.
Yeah, so like that speaks volumes about how they see Casey then.
For me, not necessarily.
Go on.
My reading it was, it's Murray to start and Gibson Park to add impact. And I think Craig Casey to get a feel of what international camp is like and the step up from Heineken Cup. I could be wrong completely.
Would your sense is if say Murray and Gibson Park got struck down, they might be calling in someone else as opposed to playing Casey?
I wouldn't be shy of playing him. I think he's a little bit like Hugo Keenan in the fact that I think the opportunities he's been given, he's excelled in, and he looks like he likes a challenge. I suppose his last 10 minutes in the Munster-Leinster game didn't do him any favours, but I would say that was adhering to the game plan in terms of this is what we do, but it's probably not what we do when we're 3 points down. Mm. But that's how is he to know? He's grossly inexperienced, and he'll be so much better for that.
Mm.
Learning in the fact that the next time he gets that, I'm sure his decision-making will be a little bit different.
We had Liam Toland on the other evening, and he just made an interesting point about the out-half situation. And Johnny Sexton actually is going to be on the show on Friday, so it'll be great to hear from him. But obviously he's getting to an age, and the World Cup is still 2 years away. And Liam Toland was making the point, and I'm kind of curious to see if you agree with this. He said, let's assume it's going to be difficult for Johnny to make it to 2023. Hopefully he surprises everyone and is still playing great then. But Liam Toland was saying, really, at World Cup level, you would like a starting number 10 who has 50 test matches under his belt. You know, ideal.
Yeah, well, you won't have that, I don't think.
Yeah, we won't. We're not going to. Like, Ross Byrne has 11, and then beneath him, the likes of Healy or Harry Byrne, etc., aren't anywhere close. So I was going to ask you, how many tests before you felt you would have been kind of really motoring at test level?
I think that 20 to 50 bracket is very different to the kind of 0 to 5, obviously, it's a blur. 5 to 10, you're kind of, yeah, I can do this. And then 10 to 20, okay, I either kick on or I get kind of pushed aside. Mm. But I think, once you get to that stage, it's obviously that you're of international capacity and capabilities. It's very, very obvious for me that the key man in all this, I think, is Joey Carberry, because he actually changes then, I suppose, the potential for Johnny's role, and the fact that I think without Joey, there's a huge onus on Johnny and a huge responsibility on Johnny to start games and do everything nearly. But the fact that if Joey was there, Johnny can easily play the backup role and play and have as much impact in 30 minutes than he could have in the 50 or 60 minutes. Yeah. So it's a very, very different dynamic, and it's a one that could be very interesting. And I think it also tactically changes the situation as well. But also the fact that if Joey finds the strides, then there's a capacity to bring in a Ross Byrne or a Harry Byrne, or another player to get up to speed with Johnny in the background as well. But talking about it, I suppose, doesn't when you're that player and you've that burning desire to be such a competitor and play for your country, and you know that it's won't last forever. Johnny isn't going to walk away. He's not going to kind of underestimate how much he brings to it and how much rightly so, he feels that not playing for Ireland would be such a big void for him.
Yeah, and I guess he's dead right to. Because the interesting thing is, Andy Farrell has about 26 matches to play with until the World Cup. You know, when you put it in those terms, it's nothing. And on the world, you know, like, he's got to balance building for that World Cup, not least at out half, with the fact that, look, the knives will be out if it's not going well. Like, would you expect if Andy Farrell blooded new out half that he'd be forgiven for losing Six Nations matches? I'm not so sure he would.
Yeah, it's a very difficult, scenario. I think for him, because as a coach, you'd be weighing up those decisions too, because you need short term results for the confidence of the group, and the best opportunity for me for short term results is obviously Johnny Sexton. He's on a different, I suppose, level to the other tens in the squad. But you know what I mean? He'd be 36 in the summer. So that, you know, at that age, I don't think you continue to improve, and it gets very, very hard on the body. So there will be decisions there, but at the minute, there isn't. You know what I mean? For example, Joey Carberry is not there, so these decisions aren't available to Andy Farrell at the minute.
Mm. Yeah, not easy. It's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. Obviously,
Carberry The other option is what they do in the Southern Hemisphere, is that they just, you know what I mean, France do it too a bit. They kind of look at World Cup cycles and they go, okay, you mean he won't be there for the World Cup. This is who we're going with. And you kind of have Entomac and you have Carbonell now, and you have Jalibert. So you have three guys probably in their very early 20s. And that's how they're building their team. So there's different ways of doing it.
Listen, we're out of time. Thanks so much for all that, Ronan O'Gara. Cheers.
Thank you, Joe. See ya. Cheers.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.